All right, welcome everybody. We are back at Anime Cons TV. I am Doug Wilder, and I'm joined this time by my good friend, Tom Aznable from the internet.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be here.
Yeah, we just got back from Anime NYC 2023. It was held... hold on. I need to look at a calendar while I do this, and we're going to leave this in because I don't care. That it was held November 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Javits Center in New York City, New York. And yeah, we're just going to talk about some of our impressions of that, some of the things we did, some of the things we liked, some of the things we didn't, might not have liked, and just go from there. So I will admit, I was kind of on the fence about going this year. I don't know why, because I almost always have a pretty good time every year I've gone. But part of the reason I was on the fence is they hadn't really announced things. And then late in the game, they started announcing a lot of people for guests, especially Japanese guests and industry guests that actually were very interesting to me. And so I kind of had to act last minute to figure out a place to stay because I don't live in New York. But I was almost kicking myself for forgetting. How about you, Tom?
Were
you
that's pretty consistent with my experience. It does seem to be the MO for this particular convention to announce guests a little bit on the later side. It does end up, generally speaking, having guests that I ultimately do want to see, but I'm also hesitant to buy ahead of time the way that it seems so many people who attend this con do, because it regularly sells out far in advance. I have less of a problem that you do as far as like finding a place to stay at long time, finding a place to stay further out, because it is actually a commuter con for me, so that's convenient. But either way, I probably should know better at this point that they've generally had at least one guest that I've been interested in seeing. But even in the way that they've announced those guests is a little odd. Like the one that made me want to go this time was Yutaka Izabuchi being there, but he wasn't even added as a guest until after people had noticed that he was slated to appear on a panel premiering his new show.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. And one of the big things for me was seeing the two Japanese voice actresses for the two lead voice actresses for Mobile Suit Gundam Witcher Mercury. And I've commented on this before. As a Gundam fan, Anime NYC is kind of a staple con. They've had so many people. They had their very first year, they got that Mobile Suit Gundam Thunderbolt Bandit Flower premiere and concert. They've brought Yoshiyuki Tomino. There's always like something pretty good for Gundam fans at this event, and that was one of those things. It's like I should have just known.
Yeah, the Gundam release cycle has become consistent enough that it seems like Sunrise and now Bandai Namco Filmworks has pretty consistently something to promote every year. And it's been generally a fairly Gundam heavy con this year, a little less than most, I think, because there wasn't anything on the immediate horizon so much as stuff that had just happened. But even announcing the two leads of Gundam the Witch from Mercury was very, very late in the game, only a few weeks out from the con itself.
Yeah, and I understand that is a bit of a challenge with getting everything squared away, and you don't want to fall into a trap where you announce someone before the contract's really solid. But at the same time, it was a little surprising. Related to that, they had a Gundam Witch from Mercury panel, and they did a couple things that I thought was really neat for kind of changing up the formula. You saw this at a lot of the kind of industry run or type panels or panels run by the convention. They kind of fit into kind of the same area where, especially for Japanese guests, they had questions up in advance with a moderator, and the moderators were really dynamic. But what they did for the cast, for these voice actresses from Witcher Mercury, was they asked a couple questions, and they had it, you know, they could make a nice slide as the question was asked, but they also had content related to that. So like they asked them, what was your favorite scene episode, and then what was your favorite scene within that episode? And after the guest answered it, because they had planned this ahead of time, they then showed the scene, which was really good because it gave a lot more context and you could see a little bit more of like, oh, they talked about this part of the scene that really got to them or things like that. And it was subtitled. It was still the Japanese audio. So you could see what they were talking about. I thought that worked really well. And I'd love to see more conventions do that. Yes, it's not as maybe intimate as fans having open Q&A, but I think it makes a better presentation overall. They also did a live reading of one scene, and obviously it's a little harder to do kind of a matching of lip flap for a scene like that. So instead, they just had the kind of the two actresses read from the script, and it just kind of faded between key frames of that scene. If you are a fan of Witch from Mercury, it's the lovers quarrel scene, which is one of the defining moments of the series. So seeing that acted out, you know, as a live reading was really cool. It was a really nice treat as a fan of the series. Another panel that Tom, you joined me on, is we went to the Magnetic Rouge panel.
Yeah, this was the aforementioned panel that was premiering Yutaka Izabuchi's new show, the previously mentioned Metallic Rouge. This was on the Crunchyroll main stage, which was kind of this this very nice open area. There was no room clear, but also just like kind of surrounded by glass, like lit by natural light for the most part. And I'm very impressed by the screen that they have in that room as well, because it does not seem to be adversely affected by all of that natural light anyway, which is great for premieres. And they had a lot of premieres at this convention as well.
Yeah. The Crunchyroll area was kind of weird because it felt like they were up on that higher floor. I think that part is called like the Crystal Palace or something. And it feels like Anime NYC never knows what to do with this space. I've seen it be the Artist Alley. They had that Gundam building world record attempt where everyone was building the same kit at the same time up there at one time. Now they've got the Crunchyroll area. And it's interesting because it also felt like very different. Whereas, say, like the Witch from Mercury panel or another one that we'll get into in it was in what they kind of called the main events area downstairs. And they had signs everywhere. This is cleared after every event. No video or photography whatsoever. The Crunchyroll one's like, yeah, no, come hang out, stay, come as long as you want. They had areas that if you showed that you had a premium subscription to Crunchyroll, you could get in different seating areas. Little things like that. And they had kind of MCs kind of filling in the gaps between events. That one sunlit room thing that stood out to me is, even the stage was well, and like you didn't get too much sunbleed every so often you would.
But as the sun was going down, it became a little bit of a problem.
But I have to give credit to Crunchyroll. They were giving away little cardboard or cardstock branded visors for one show that they were promoting this year. And I was like, that's actually pretty clever for that room. Like that, like whoever came up with that idea for that, because of they were using that room, like I think earned a small bonus for that, because I think that was a really clever idea.
I think they finally kind of figured out what to really do with that space, because in previous years when they had, say, the Artist Alley, like you mentioned there, it felt like what it was doing was separating it off from the rest of the convention in a way that made it feel inconvenient. By having a more of a focal area there where you have things like these big premiere panels or the Jujutsu Kaisen experience, which every time we passed by it, the line was capped. That was a very popular event. I think they figured out what to do with that space.
Yeah.
Make it more of a destination.
That's very true. And they had some photo opportunities there. They had like a little booth for giving away their own swag. It was interesting seeing they had some photo opportunity areas, but there was a lot in the dealer's room too, like a lot of industry booths had pitchers. Like, I know you, both you and I got pitchers at the ZOM 100 zombie shark thing. And there's a bunch of other ones that you could do. And I think they're nice because they're interactive, but they're pretty quick. Like, you know, you're not waiting in a long line for something. It moves pretty quickly. You get your pitcher, you go on.
Generally speaking, line management overall, I thought was something that this convention did a pretty good job with. I very rarely, like, really stood in a line that I felt was out of reason.
I'll get to that in a little bit, because I think line management was pretty good. I think crowd management was where there were a couple times it felt a little unwieldy. But just to finish up Magnetic Rouge, that was a fun event. Again, they had the preset questions for the Japanese guests, and it worked really well. Dynamic moderator made that really good. And this isn't premiering until January, so it was impressive that we got to see a first episode this far in advance.
They did say it was the world premiere as well, too, which is pretty cool. I think part of what I really liked about, you said before that, like, there's kind of the trade-off between either you have these managed Q&As with provided questions that have, you know, supporting material, and you have that the benefit of having prepared stuff there, versus the fan Q&As, which potentially can have very good questions and can be very organic, but can also kind of be can bring everything to a halt. And they've tried to address those multiple ways, whether screening questions or whatnot, but it doesn't always work out. The trade-off is, you with managed prepared questions, you don't necessarily always get the kind of questions that fans actually want to ask. And I think generally the panels that we did attend that have that, I thought there was a marked improvement in that area there, where generally speaking, the kinds of questions that were being asked felt to me like the kind of questions that I would want to hear answered. Like, with in the case of Metallic Rouge, it's a show that is directed by a prominent mechanical designer who has worked on mecha shows. This is not strictly speaking a mecha show, but it does have kind of a power suit element to it that's reminiscent of Tokusatsu. And I believe literally the first question asked by the moderator was specifically about the show's design connections to Tokusatsu. So I thought that was very savvy as far as asking what the fans in attendance would be interested in for that kind of a show.
Yeah, they were pre-prepared, but they were well thought out too. They got good answers from them, versus sometimes you ask a question and you get like a two-word answer and then you move on.
Yeah, I think that in this case, maybe it was a little serendipitous, because it seems like the collaboration between like Tokusatsu and anime staff was kind of one of the selling points of this thing. But regardless, I thought that was good. And that extends to other panels that we went to as well, that I felt like the questions that they had prepared were good ones.
Yeah. The next one panel that we'll mention that you and I attended to was they did the Studio Trigger for the 10th anniversary of Kill la Kill and the 15th anniversary of Gurren Lagann, which saying both of those out loud makes me feel a little old. But they worked well as a combo, even though these were both originally Gainax shows.
Well, Kill la Kill was Trigger, but but Gurren Lagann is now, I believe, in the hands of Trigger rights-wise, and that's a more recent development.
But we hurried there from the Magnetic Rouge panel, and we were going to miss it. But we got a good chunk of the Kill la Kill content and all of the Gurren Lagann content. And again, it was really well thought out questions, very engaging, really, really good moderators. I think actually Anime NYC actually put out like applications for people to apply to be moderators. And that may have actually helped, as if they interviewed and screened people, because they definitely... They worked the crowd well and got everyone engaged and things like that.
It also makes me wonder if the moderators themselves, if it is a position that you can apply for rather than, say, you working for Crunchyroll, like was the case with the Metallic Rouge panel. I don't know whether or not these moderators were Crunchyroll staff or not, but some of the questions asked were things like, oh, I've wanted to know the answer to this question for, you know, 15 years, so to speak. I think the specific question was, you know, when the robots in Gurren Lagann emote, is that some show that like the robots have their own will, or is it an extension of the pilot, right? Like something like that is such a specific question to me that feels like it's very intentional, as opposed to something that was just like a selling point.
Yeah. And that one was fun, and hearing finally getting the dates for when we're going to see the Gurren Lagann movies come to theaters for the anniversary in America, which I cannot wait for. That's going to be so much fun.
Like, and in 4DX, no less. I mean, when Promare came out, it feels like it wasn't that long ago, but it has been a few years. That came out in 4DX, and that was a real hoot. So seeing Gurren Lagann that way, I'm really looking forward to it.
I hope those tickets don't sell out before I can get to it, because I definitely want to go see it in the 4DX. Just it's the right. I think a couple of us were talking about this out of the fact. Gurren Lagann is the right property for that kind of experience, because it's so over the top, so ridiculous, and that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, it's just a very stupid way to watch movies, and I think that, like you said, like Gurren Lagann is just the kind of a thing that can fully lean into how silly and awesome something like that is.
Yeah. One last panel that we'll talk about is the Bandai Namco Films panel, which that used to be Sunrise, and they've kind of consolidated and everything. This one, I think, was... like, there was a lot, they had a lot of content, but it felt kind of like a dud, because it's like, okay, we're going to talk about this show for 5 minutes, bring up this guest from the show, talk for 5 minutes, send them away, move on to the next show. And it didn't have the same energy.
This was, I think, a little bit closer to what you expect when you hear the sort of managed industry panel description. Because for the most part, the content was... read a synopsis, play a trailer, move on to the next thing. There were a few that had staff and like voice actors showed up. Blue Lock was what they kicked off with. They had a number of people who worked on that. They brought back the Witch from Mercury voice actors for, I think, 5 to 10 minutes, which was nice, because, I mean, for me personally, I wasn't able to attend on Friday, so we were able to get a little piece of that. And my understanding is that was promoted on the description of the panel as well.
Yeah.
They did make a brand new announcement of a VR Gundam film, but I think that was probably the most notable thing there.
Yeah.
Even Gundam Seed Freedom, which is coming out in just a few short months and is literally decades in the making, all they had to say was, here's a synopsis and here's the first trailer. I think literally the day after they released the fourth trailer for that movie, and they still were showing the initial trailer that really didn't
show
off that much of that movie.
Yeah. I do want to point out, though, that you said things kicked off with Blue Lock, and that's the soccer and a show.
Oh, that wasn't even intentional.
Yeah, so the one thing I will say, though, with the panels is... there was a fan panels track, but it was kind of small. Like, there weren't very many going on.
What I noticed is that a lot of them seemed to be along the lines of workshops, like how-to sort of panels. And one thing that I found a little... one thing I didn't like about those descriptions of fan panels is a lot of them did not give you an idea of who was putting it on. And that could be the fault of the panel descriptions as well. But I feel like I've seen schedules for other cons at least throw like a name of the presenter under the panel. And that really only you'd see that for industry and guests.
Yeah. And we've both been going to conventions for long enough that there are definitely names where we see, oh, so-and-so is doing that panel. Now I want to check it out.
Right. Even if it's something you wouldn't necessarily think to be interested in.
Right. And I don't know. They're expanding to use the full space of the Javits. I think this con would benefit from adding more and more fan panel content, because it felt like it had more in its earlier years. And that might just be that the ratio was different from industry stuff to fan panel stuff. It also just, it didn't feel like there was much, like they had some signage, not a lot. But it just didn't feel like they were doing enough to drive people to check out fan panels, especially where a lot of the industry stuff was capped. You had to, you know, enter a lottery to see if you could get in for a lot of them. And I'd like to see encouraging it, because this way you get people at seated content and, you know, checking something out. Because there was a lot of times where I didn't see people standing in lines, but I just saw people just sitting around kind of doing nothing, like on a stairwell and stuff like that. And I feel like if you offer more content, and like a panel room doesn't require much. You need a staffer to make sure there's running the tech, and you need, you know, a panelist and set up the chairs. But if you keep it as a panel room the entire weekend, it's not a lot of upkeep, honestly. And I think if you have that and get more people, that you're getting them engaged more, and then they'll spend more time at the convention overall because there's more things for them to do.
And I think at a convention like this that is so industry forward, really the way that they're presenting a fan programming is a good way to have that stuff fall through the cracks.
Yeah. And it's the one thing the term I heard a couple people throwing around, especially as this con is now moving from mid to late November, which I think I always, a lot of people actually like, because yes, it was cold, it could be cold outside, is in moving to now late August, is it starting to feel like Anime Expo East Coast instead of when this con started? It still felt much more closer to had a really good fan element of it. And I really am starting to worry about how this con is going to go forward.
Yeah, it's funny because it seems like one of the complaints that you'd hear is that, I mean, I personally like where it fell in the year, because it's not a time of the year that I typically go to cons. I know people have complained that it falls pretty close to New York Comic Con. But throwing it into the late summer runs it up against Anime Expo and Otakon. So
yeah,
it becomes you're really going to have to make your decisions on which one to attend. I think a lot of people are.
Yeah, and especially where anime fans generally skew younger, at late August, people are getting ready to go back to school or have already started. So it's harder to take that time off. And just, I liked doing, there's a lot of little things I liked about that time of year where there weren't as many conventions. It was a nice kind of wind down for the end of the year. You know, it's usually was the week before Thanksgiving. I think every year I've gone to this con, I've done more Christmas shopping for other geek friends and family than my own shopping at this convention.
I think it's also going to affect vendors where they're going to have to choose one con over the other, and they're going to have to make that choice of, you know, are we tabling at Otakon, or are we tabling at Anime NYC? So I think this really does throw them into fairly direct competition with Otakon.
Yeah, and I will never say I won't do Anime NYC next year, but it's going to be very unlikely for me. Because it's so close to Otakon, and if I have to choose one or the other, given what I know now, it's going to be Otakon.
And will this also threaten to gobble up Otakon's supply of guests as well? Because while Otakon is in DC and that's prestigious in its own right, it's also pretty attractive to Japanese guests, I'm sure, to be able to go to New York.
Yep. So, but as you talked about kind of the dealers having to choose, that was also the thing that this, like, again, we saw this, it really feels like a lot of the traffic, they're trying to push it to the dealer's room floor, the show floor. Like, a lot of industry stuff, like, creators had big booths, and just, there was some really weird stuff at the dealer's room this year. Like, again, this is a con that always gets Gundam guests, and the Bandai booth didn't bring back the kind of the Gundam base experience that they had last year. Instead, they had that at New York Comic Con a few weeks before this. and the only Gundam merch that both stuff they had at their booth was two exclusive prints, a $50 one and an $80 one, and they only had like 100 of each, which I understand it's a limited edition, but that's a pretty low amount. Like, that's going to sell out instantly.
And my understanding is that's basically what happened.
Yeah, like, that was a weird decision. Aniplex had a big booth at promoting some stuff. I don't know about you, but I felt a little uncomfortable that they're still really pushing new Rurouni Kenshin anime, given how problematic that creator is. And I don't know if that's we had a contractor that's, you know, sunk cost at this point, but that felt a little weird. Like, maybe promote some other stuff that you've got coming up. But there was a couple weird tables too. There was the U.S. Army recruiting table, the FBI recruiting table, and not only were this Army, but also the Marines, and they didn't have just a table. They had like a whole booth. Like, that was a big footprint for that booth.
Yeah, they had pull-up bars set up to kind of coax people to test their might, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun every so often. You look over there and see someone doing it in a costume. But it was still really kind of weird. There were some other... I will say the Anime NYC merch booth... Every time I walked by that during when the Duotron was open, it always had a line from the beginning of the day to it. It kept moving, but it always had a line. I was really surprised how popular that booth was. And I mean, their merchandise seemed pretty good. It was a little more expensive than anything I wanted to pay for this time around. But again, they seemed to be doing well because they were always had people there. They had like HoloLive presentations at one booth, and this is where I was talking about line control was great, crowd control was not good, because people were just making a giant throng of people watching this presentation at the booth, and it was right near one of the entrances to the main like show floor, so it just seemed like kind of almost a fire hazard, or just if you weren't interested in but you were trying to get in through that door, you had to kind of really kind of force your way through. It just seemed like a poor setup. Maybe it was a bad placement choice, but also just a bad choice of how to use that area. And it kind of bothered me that I have no problem with HoloLive as a fandom, but the logistics of it, I think, needed another pass.
Well, I'm sure it must be tricky because, I mean, HoloLive is very, very popular right now. Yeah. So, of course, you'd want it to be upfront and easy to find and kind of a focus. But it does, but as a direct result of its popularity and the kinds of presentations they were doing, where they were doing like, I think basically live bits where they were like piping in the VTubers and kind of doing crowd interaction, that's going to attract a lot of people. So I'm not really sure what the solution to that is. Speaking of potential fire hazards, it's like a consistent thing with the Javits. And another thing I'm not really sure how you solve besides just like really getting on people about this, people just kind of congregating on stairs.
Yeah.
And just like sitting there and like really just blocking up the whole thing.
This year definitely felt a lot more crowded too. I saw they line people up outside before they opened on Friday, and then they had kind of the rope drop, so to speak, and watching that line queue up and seeing how quickly it grew before they opened the rope and stanchion, it was just like, wow, people are still coming. I'll be curious to see if they give us attendance numbers, how it compares to last year, but it definitely felt like there was a lot more people this time around. One vendor I do want to kind of shout out, or actually there's a couple of vendors I do want to shout out that I liked. I like that this year I saw not just like one Japanese tourism booth, but like a set of three or four of them. And they also had, Japanese language learning, like a block of them. The New York Public Library had a booth. And I want to see more stuff like that in the duos room, because there is space for it, without a doubt. And I think these are, they're not going to get as high end, high amounts of traffic as a vendor selling, anime goods. But I think they're good things to have, and I think they're resources worth exploring and stuff. And I talked with kind of the tourism ones, and they were really fun. They had a couple where you could do the little lottery to see if you could win a prize or something like that, just small things. But they actually had a lot of good information. Like, I got a couple maps of anime locations that you can visit. Either, hey, here's where this one iconic scene in this one anime happens that you can go visit this site, or it's like, hey, here's where the Gundam statue is.
Right.
And I like that there's a mix of that. So I think those are neat ones to do. And again, I like seeing the library too, because I think it's a good thing to emphasize, especially with, out of print books or stuff like that, that I think getting more fans to know that they can use that is a good thing to do, or just that they host events. Libraries host their own miniature conventions from time to time. Also, just one other booth that I like seeing was Book Off, which has a store, has at least one store. Does it have any more in New York, or is it just
that? Yes, they've opened an anime-focused store in Industry City's Japantown area. And they've actually moved a lot of their more anime-focused stock to that one. And so their convention appearances are very much in line with what they have at that particular location.
Yeah, but they had a lot of, I wouldn't say almost older, inexpensive stuff, like little miniature figures that you got at a gacha machine in Japan.
Tchotchkes, basically.
Yeah. But the price point was very, very reasonable, and you had to dig through to see if you could find anything. It wasn't that well organized, which, given the nature of that, I'm okay with. But it was neat to see, and it was a booth where you had to sift, but it wasn't complete chaos. Like, everything was still on hooks in bags, so you could kind of live through, versus just like a tub of junk. So I like seeing that and knowing that store. And they actually did mention that, oh, yeah, if you want to come, we do have an actual storefront in New York if you want to see more of this stuff. And you don't see too many vendors like that anymore with the small tchotchkes, at least the older ones, that are at least still organized.
Book Off is uniquely advantaged in the sense that I'm fairly certain that they do actually ship stuff over from their parent stores in Japan. Because the amount of stuff that they have and the range of ages that it tends to be seems like it's also being imported and not just being sold by anime fans and Japanese expats in New York.
I will say, one of the items I found, I know it was from kind of a set of figures, and I looked it up because I was curious about it, because I wanted to see how many more I can find from this series. And I realized this was like a 20-year-old gacha set. So now I have a quest to hopefully check back with them in the future. Any vendors stick out to you? There are ones that you wanted to mention?
Yes and no. No, in the sense that I noticed a gap of things, which I suppose is indicative of just the way people are consuming anime, and that's a shrinkage in the amount of physical video media in the dealer's room. There was the odd vendor that would have a small offering of them as part of a larger stock. But for the most part, I think the only vendor I saw that had a dedicated physical video media presence was Media Blasters, which curiously has their own convention coming up in just a few weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, typically you can rely on a company like Discotech to have that sort of thing, but they were not in attendance at Anime NYC. But you still see manga going very, very strong. A vendor I was really pleased to see was someone, a seller who was specializing in Japanese 7-inch 45 vinyl records, large largely singles, not just anime stuff either, but also city pop and also stuff that ranged from the 60s up until the 90s as far as singles from the Showa era. It was very, very interesting, but also as a vinyl collector myself, I really appreciated that they actually had a listening station there so you could try before you buy, which you very rarely see even among sellers that specialize in vinyl at conventions.
Yeah, that was a nice little one. Like, and that was a good booth to walk by because they changed what they were playing from. They would just pick another one from the collection, so you'd hear a bunch of different stuff too. So it kind of made walking past it every so often less of a chore, more of a treat, because it was very different.
Their prices were, relatively speaking, fairly reasonable. It's also kind of a segment of that market that I don't really see addressed at anime conventions that often. Usually you see the full 12-inch vinyl records that are, frankly, kind of become inflated in price at a lot of these conventions that I've seen when vendors have them. But this guy, he both kind of knew what he want, but also wasn't necessarily trying to take an arm and a leg for what he had, which was pretty cool.
I will backtrack to just kind of the home video stuff. I saw two other vendors that had some stuff, and I caught one vendor in the morning just kind of grumbling that, like, oh, yeah, it's not been a great con for me. No one's buying DVDs. And I said, you know, thought, I like, oh, well, I'll take a look because there's a couple of things that I might be interested in. And it was, well, and I didn't say this out loud, but my thought was, well, you're charging full retail price for everything. Everyone knows any of these things, they can go on Amazon or shop a sale and get it for much less.
Yeah, nobody's paid full retail for any DVD or Blu-ray in 20 years.
Yeah. I did spend a little bit of time in Artist Alley. That Artist Alley was pretty busy every time I walked through. I could still see stuff, but it seemed to be moving along pretty well. I did like the variety of styles. That was kind of one of my complaints about Otakon this past year, is a lot of the arts felt very much the same. And I didn't get that impression at this con. It felt there was a bigger variety of styles by what the artist was, like what type of look they gave, their aesthetic, and the color palettes they used, as well as just what the subjects were. It felt a much bigger variety.
I was also noticing a lot more artists had things like zines or like little mini art books, which tends to be the things that I'm interested in. I think that's pretty cool. Overall, I'm increasingly impressed with the level of quality that Artist Alleys have reached in general. And I think making the Artist Alley an extension of the vendors hall, the exhibit hall, is a good move, because you get all that traffic there anyway, and people are there to buy things.
Yep. And I think the way it's set up, where you kind of go in, you start in the dealer's room and then go to the Artist Alley. If you kind of do that at the end, like, oh, well, you know, my budget was, I don't know, $200, and I've got $50 left for my spending money. Now I'm in Artist Alley. Let's see what I can find. I think sometimes it's an afterthought if it's a different area, where it's like, well, I've done my shopping in the dealer's room. Now let's move on to the next thing. So you kind of just keep momentum going.
Also kind of interesting, so they also had food kind of around the perimeter of the dealer's hall. And it seemed to be primarily focused on Japanese and Korean food, which I thought was an interesting touch. Yeah. Also, they had Dippin' Dots, which I want to see at more conventions. But that's just me.
My one complaint there, though, is, especially in the Artist Alley side where this was another area where there was like no seating. So people just sat on the floor by these food vendors and stuff like that. So it was... I like having them, but I think there are ways to add some seating or something like that. But to your point of the style of food, it was good. I can't think of any other convention I've been to where I saw an okonomiyaki vendor.
and multiple onigiri vendors who are frankly charging far more than I would ever spend on onigiri, but it is what it is. It's convention center food.
Exactly.
I noticed that in comparison to other conventions that I've attended, the arcade area was relatively small. Where, say, like Otakon has basically an entire hall dedicated to arcade, there was just kind of a small corner of the greater dealer's room.
Maybe a dozen machines?
Yeah, it wasn't a lot. They definitely didn't have bigger machines either. They have, you know, your requisite kind of your smaller rhythm games and your row of Astro City, like, fight cabs. But apart from that, oh, and I think Initial D machines, but I think that was for the most part what they had. It wasn't a huge variety compared to what I've seen at a convention like Otakon.
Yeah. So anything else that you want to mention that you did or anything before we wrap it up?
Yes. So I'm somebody who enjoys a good flea market, a good deal, a good bargain. And I was pleased to see on the schedule that there was a swap meet. I'm a big fan of the Anime Boston swap meet in particular. So I was eager to see what this would be like. And it was a little bit of a dud for a number of reasons. Probably the biggest reason being that on the actual program guide, it was listed as being in a room that did not exist and did not show up on any map. So I had to ask a staffer for help, and they kind of guided me to where they thought it would be. And luckily, it was actually there. But that's kind of a big problem, right? Especially when you have it in your app. And Anime NYC, they don't use Guidebook. They have their own specific app. You'd think they'd be able to update that if it was, you know, brought to their attention. But no such luck. But it was really only maybe like, I don't know, 9 or 10 people with a bunch of tchotchkes laid out on blankets in a room. And it just like, it wasn't particularly interesting. Also on the schedule, it was basically one of the last events you could go to on Sunday. And by that point, most people are either clearing out or they're grabbing what bargains they can in the dealer's room, of which,
That's not a good time.
Yeah, it wasn't, it was a bit disappointing in that way. But as far as bargains in the dealer's room, Drawn and Quarterly did not want to go home with books. So a number of us made out with some really incredible deals.
There you go. So, all right. Well, Tom, before we let you go, where can people find you out in the world these days if they want to see what you're up to?
Well, I guess I'm still technically on the site formerly known as Twitter under Tom Aznable. I'm also on Blue Sky, though I'm not particularly active on there, though I'm not really active on either. So I guess you can still relatively just find me as Tom Aznable in places until the internet settles into a new equilibrium.
Sounds good. And if you want to find us, always check us out at AnimeCons TV. I'm also on the site formerly known as Twitter, with @Nigoki. You can also find me on Blue Sky with Nigoki. But let us know how you guys are doing, if you went to Anime NYC or if you're checking out any other cons recently. If you're going to, Anime NJ, the one that's coming up with Media Blasters?
That's right.
Definitely check that out. We want to see how that one goes, with that one being so close to Christmas. And we know a couple people that are attending, and we want to hear from them. And send us lots of information. We're on Facebook, Twitter, all sorts of places. And you can always send us a good old-fashioned email at podcast@animecons.tv. I'm Doug Wilder. I've been joined today by Tom Aznable, and we'll see you guys again soon.